This is KBOO's The Voice of the Middle East. صوت الشرق الأوسط من إذاعة كيبو و صدای خبر میانه از رادیو KBOO.
طلوا حبابنا طلوا نسيانا بين ربوعنا قلبه تحت سهرات جوانه وطلوا حبابنا طلوا نسيانا بين ربوعنا فيات غنينا وعلى مياه لقينا على أقصى ما حلو من زهد الطير الشاد نحن حكايات في بال منا نغمات موال نحن حكايات
صلى صلى
أوف نحن حكايات في بال منا نغمات موال
Good evening. Welcome to another installment of the Voices of the Middle East. This is Gudarzak Tudari, your host, and you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. And you can hear our voice in the whole Willamette Valley and the Gorge, and also on cyberspace at www.kboo.fm. Welcome. Tonight we will have an interview with the Dr. Beeman that I will introduce a little bit later. Since our last show, things in the Middle East have not changed much, except for the roadmap that President Bush and his administration are trying to basically push to happen. Unfortunately, in the past week, after the meetings in the Middle East, both in Egypt and in Aqaba, the final result is still uncertain, and there are lots of questions and doubts whether the roadmap will succeed, especially with the level of violence that have basically covered the whole area past week, after some attacks between Israeli military over Gaza Strip to assassinate Hamas leaders, and the suicide bombings by Hamas members inside the Israel. Unfortunately, the in the past few days, the number of victims all of a sudden went up to 25 and 30 yesterday, and there was another attack today. Helicopter gunships attacked some houses and a car and killed one of the Hamas leaders with his wife and, I believe, 3-year-old child. With all these atrocities, the chance of roadmap being successful is becoming dim as we speak. But in other part of the Middle East, especially in Iraq, U.S. forces have not been able to implement any kind of security or bring back the infrastructure that was damaged and destroyed during the 12 years of sanction, as well as the military operation there. The news are that U.S. Forces and U.S. administration in Iraq are trying to control the flow of information by controlling journalists from outside the country who are operating in Iraq, and making them to check with them before reporting anything. They have arrested several Iranian TV reporters, and took their videos out of their hand. They have also forced Iraqi journalists who, in the past month, they have been able to publish close to 60 different newspapers and magazines, using the freedom that, that they feel in their country, and they try to basically bring the voice of the people. Unfortunately, again, U.S. Troops there and the U.S. administration under Mr. Bremer tries to control that. In the House here, we have lots of activities going on, trying to bring other plans. And one of those issues that is the topic of our discussion tonight with Professor Beeman is the fact that a part of the neocons and people who are in Washington, they're trying to create a situation that a military intervention in other countries besides Iraq become imminent. One of the people who is at the forefront of these activities is a Michael Ledeen, who is I think he's a PhD in history and philosophy, a fellow at Conservative American Enterprise Institute. And I'm reading a piece of his comments, basically, when he talked at the policy forum of the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, JINSA, on April 30. He declared that the time for diplomacy is at the end. It is time for a free Iran, free Syria, and free Lebanon. He had lots of, quotes and comments, and he's very active in Iranian community of a certain group of Iranian communities in Southern California trying to sell his ideas of regime change in Iran. And that would be the topic for our interview tonight. And talking to Professor William Beeman, who is a professor of anthropology and theater, speech and dance. He's director of Middle East Studies at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. We'll be discussing forces behind the regime change in Iran initiative. Dr. Beeman is very knowledgeable about the current situation in Iran, and he has written several books that are related basically to Iran. One of them is Culture, Performance, and Communication in Iran, Language, Status, and Power in Iran. One of them is published in Tokyo, Institute for the Study of Language and Cultures of Asia and Africa in 1982. And the Language, Status, and Power in Iran, published in Bloomington, Indiana University Press, 1986. Also written Object, Image, and Inquiry, The Art Historian at Work by Getty Press, 1988, with Elizabeth Bikewell. And The Third Line, The Opera Performer as Interpreter at Indiana University Press publication, 1993. Dr. Beeman also I think is an opera singer himself. And welcome, Dr. Beeman, to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I had the pleasure to read Dr. Beeman's articles, and he's been very active in recent months and weeks by writing about different issues related to the war in Iraq, and especially on Iran, because he's very knowledgeable about the internal policies and the issue with the outside forces that I mentioned. His writings appear at pacificnews.org, and also he's written op-eds for Los Angeles Times and other major newspapers. Let me start with asking you, first of all, Dr. Beeman, why do you think there is this push by someone like Michael Ledeen, who's been part of the Iran-Contra scandal, and now is pushing for regime change in Iran, when he was practically sold military equipment and weapons to Iran during the Iran-Iraq war in early 80s.
Well, Michael Ledeen is very solidly in the camp of the neoconservatives in Washington. He, as you mentioned, he's a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, where he actually holds a chair. He's an advisor to Karl Rove, who is the president's chief strategist, and has been operating with Richard Perle and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. And I think that we can understand that he's involved in a what I might call a community of discourse with these individuals. And so the ideas that he reflects are, I think, reasonably reflective of the thinking of the entire group. There are many people in Washington who have been angry at the regime in Iran for a very long time, and they would like to see a regime change in Iran. They've been waiting for evolutionary forces in Iran to take hold. I think that a lot of people had high hopes that with the reformers, with President Khatami, that there would be some change in Iran. Now we see that he's come to the end of two terms, and the kinds of reforms that people had hoped have not taken place. And so individuals like Ladin are interested in trying to encourage regime change from within. He talks quite a lot about the fact that there could be an internal revolution in Iran. That is, that people should rise up and throw over the clerical rule in the country. And has suggested that the emigre community in the United States could play a very large role in this. In a speech in Los Angeles, he said that for $20 million, Iran could have regime change. And when he was asked who they should give the $20 million to, he more or less said that he knew who they should give it to, and if they would come to him, he'd tell them. So he has, I think, a very clear connection to Washington and is trying very much to encourage this kind of internal change right now.
Do you think that people like Michael Ladin, how much influence do they have on real characters such as Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld?
I think they have a great deal of influence because, as I say, they're existing in a very small community where people are more or less only talking to each other. And he is in the same group, not only at the American Enterprise Institute, but also a group of individuals that are represented by Benador Associates. A very interesting woman, Eliana Benador, is a Peruvian linguist who's established a kind of an agency for neoconservative speakers and writers. And she places her clients' work in newspapers and also gets them speaking engagements. And again, people like Richard Perle and Elliot Abrams are involved with this, and these are people who are directly advising the White House on Middle Eastern affairs.
Is she kind of promoting Reza Pahlavi, the son of the Shah of Iran, too?
Yes, she is. She's appeared with Reza Pahlavi at many, many public events, and seems to be very closely tied to him. And so this is one of the things that I think has caused a lot of people to associate Michael Ladin also with Reza Pahlavi, although I should tell you that Michael Ladin himself continually denies that he is a monarchist or that he's necessarily pushing Reza Pahlavi. Although I will tell you that on the American Enterprise Institute website, he's quoted as saying that he feels that Reza Pahlavi would be an excellent choice for Iranians if they wanted a new leader.
But I mean, if he assumed that he's honest in saying that he's not supporting Reza Pahlavi, but who else might be a candidate for his support?
Well, that's a very good question. He hasn't given us any other names. But he has mentioned Reza Pahlavi as what he feels a suitable leader. He has said on many public occasions that, you know, we may not know who the leader is who's going to arise out of the Iranian public, but that there needs to be someone, and that he feels that there will be a popular uprising that will make this happen.
Okay, Bill, can you I'm not sure that our listeners are that familiar with the Iranian diaspora and basically outside forces. Could you run down a summary of what are really the Iranian opposition groups outside, or not just the groups, but also the movement and different school of thought that might be part of this whole democracy movement?
Well, there are a number of groups that are outside of Iran, and I think that you're on the West Coast in Portland, and maybe you don't see the full force of this, since the very largest group of Iranian emigres and people of Iranian background are in California, and mostly in Southern California, although there are a large number in Northern California. There are some others on the East Coast in the New York area, and others scattered around the country. But the very, very largest number, more than a million, is in Southern California. And there are three important groups. There are some Iranians living outside of Iran who definitely support the current regime and believe in the Islamic Republic, and they happen to be living outside of Iran for reasons of career or because they came here for an education. There's another group that are very openly monarchist. That is, they want to see the regime of the Pahlavi regime restored in Iran. They look back to the past and feel that life was better under the Shah, and that a revolution should never have taken place, and that the Shah should be restored to power. There's a third group who are individuals who are interested in establishing a democracy or a republic in Iran, who are not interested in having any kind of monarch, and certainly not interested in restoring the Pahlavis to power. So these are the three groups that are primarily operating outside of Iran. In Iraq, we also have the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, sometimes called the MEK or the MKO. Mm-hmm. This is a group that has been in existence for some time. They actually have a pedigree that dates all the way back to the to 1953, to the overthrow of the Mossadegh regime, and they've evolved over time. They were opposed to the Shah, and now they're opposed to the present government of Iran. They're a militaristic organization that has been established in Iraq really ever since Saddam Hussein came to power. And the United States recently reached a truce with this group, and there are some military strategists in Washington who believe that this organization, with all of its military equipment, could serve as a vanguard to try to attack the present government in Tehran.
And I guess we can add that this same group is on the list of State Department as a terrorist organization. Is that correct?
That's correct. So there seems to be a little bit of hypocrisy operating here. They are listed as a terrorist group, and yet the United States is holding them in reserve, as it were, thinking that they may be useful if there is an attack against Tehran. I should point out to you that a number of neoconservatives have tried very hard to revise Washington's view of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq. There was a famous paper that was written by Daniel Pipes, among others, who is a very well-known neoconservative in Washington, who
Let's talk a little bit about the move from Senate and specifically the Iran Democracy Act that Senator Brownback is suggesting, and I guess to surprise for our listeners, Senator Ron Wyden, which is a senator of Oregon, a Democratic senator from Oregon, is also a co-signer of that resolution. It's called Senate Resolution 82, which specifically calls for regime change in Iran. Could you speak about how these, it's kind of confusing to me that a right-wing Republican senator and a liberal Democrat are coming together and signing this. Maybe I'm missing something in the politics of
Washington. Yeah, it is a very curious business, and I think that perhaps it reflects the rather consistent American policy toward Iran since the Iranian Revolution. It hasn't really mattered whether we have a Democrat in the White House or a Republican in the White House. The various administrations in the United States have all felt that they need to express opposition to the current government in Iran. And the United States, I think, is still very angry at Iran for the hostage crisis that took place so many years ago. It's curious because 75% of the Iranian population is under the age of 25, and they don't remember this at all. But whether it's been a Democratic administration or a Republican administration, the things like sanctions against the Iranian government, the lack of diplomatic representation, hostility toward the Iranian government has been consistent. And so it doesn't surprise me actually that we would have a Republican and a Democrat signing off on a bill that was designed to try to promote regime change in Iran at the present time.
And as part of that, resolution, it's being suggested to spend about $50 million on democracy movement in Iran?
It's $50 million. Primarily, they're talking about giving money directly to opposition groups within Iran, and I would assume, although they don't say so, the Mujahideen Khalq, the MEK or MKO, and also to provide money to support broadcast, radio broadcast, and publication of anti-regime propaganda that can be distributed to the Iranian citizenry and also broadcast to the Iranian citizenry.
Okay. The other thing I want to ask you before we go to a break is you mentioned, we talked about Michael Ledeen. Who are the other players in this whole project? I know, for example, Rob Sobhani is one of them.
Yes, Rob Sobhani is an individual who has been active politically for some time. He has a very interesting biography. He claims that his family escaped from Iran to escape the tyranny of the Shah. In fact, his father was a general under the Shah. He was born himself in Kansas, but it was because his father was stationed at Fort Leavenworth in Kansas in order to get military training under an official relationship between the U.S. government and the government of the Shah. He married in the United States. He describes himself in one of his documents as a Catholic, which is very strange. But he ran for office twice in Maryland. And he is an energy consultant, and also, because he's originally from Azerbaijan and then speaks Azerbaijani, he's obtained a position to advise the president of the Republic of Azerbaijan, Aliyev. And he seems very interested in the possibility of some kind of regime change in Iran that would facilitate the transport of Caspian oil through Iran.
Okay, I guess I just want to remind the listeners that you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is Voices of the Middle East, and I am Gudar Zektedari talking to Dr. Beeman, professor of anthropology at Brown University. We'll listen to a few minutes of the music, and then we'll be back. And our phones will be open after this break. The number to call is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. You can call with your questions.